Erev Shabbat Chukat. I have a feeling that the overwhelming majority of the Divrei Torah that are going to be offered in both online and in synagogues over the next 24 hours or 48 hours will be devoted to the first part of the parsha, which relates to the Fred Heifer, with all kinds of discussions about the known and the unknown, the rational and the unrational, intellectual humility, and all kinds of things like that. Things which I talk about a lot, so therefore I'm not going to talk about them. I'd like to focus in on the story of the waters of strife, the Mei Meriva, towards the middle of the portion, in which we read that the people were thirsty, and God told Moses to go to a specific rock and to speak to it. Moses lost it. He got very angry, and in order to express his anger at the people for their rebelliousness, he hits the rock. Water comes, but God says, that's it, finished. You guys, you and Aaron, can't bring the people into the land. Ultimately, Joshua will do it. There were many, 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 many discussions about what was Moses' sin here. I mean, yes, he didn't follow orders, but this wasn't... he didn't make a golden calf. What was going on? Why was he disqualified from bringing the people into the land, from realizing the end of his mission? I mean, that's what he was supposed to bring people out of Egypt, then bring them to Sinai, get the Torah, and then bring them finally to the land of Israel. I refer you to a wealth of commentaries on this issue. That's not what I want to talk about. I would like to share with you an insight which was offered by a 14th century commentator, Yosef Ibn Kaspi, from the town of Argentière in Provence, Kaspi, Kesef, Argent, silver, which I think illuminates not so much the nature of the sin, but rather the background for the intensity and severity of the punishment which God inflicted on Moses. So, in order to do that, we have to actually fast forward, because Kaspi's comment is not on our parsha. Ibn Kaspi's comment, is actually found in the Book of Joshua. The Book of Joshua tells us that when on the eve of the beginning of the siege of Jericho, after Joshua had already crossed the Jordan, people had settled in on the other side. He looked up one day, one evening, and he saw an armed man with a drawn sword looking at him. And somewhat startled, he drew his own sword and said to him, "Who are you? Are you, you know, with us? Are you a friend or foe?" And the man, turns out to have been an angel, he said, "I am the commander of God's forces, and I have come now to see you." So Joshua bows down and says, "What does my Lord need?" And he says, "Shal na'alcha me'al raglecha, ki adama sherata omed alea admat kodeshi. Take your shoe off, because the land upon which you stand is holy ground." Ibn Kaspi notes, and it's obvious to make the connection, that this is almost exactly what God says to Moses when Moses gets his first revelation at the burning bush on Mount Sinai. As Moses comes into the presence of God near the bush, he hears a voice that says, "Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, ki ha'adama she'atau me'alea admat kodeshi. Take your shoes off of your feet, for the land upon which you stand is holy ground." Asks Ibn Kaspi, "I don't understand. How come here Moses was told to take off both shoes, and here Joshua was told to take off only one? What's the point? Obviously, this is symbolic, and it has to have a deeper meaning." So Ibn Kaspi says, the difference in the injunction by the angel, or by God, or to Moses, actually indicates a very, very significant difference between Moses and Joshua, in their personality, in their personae, in their spiritual aspirations and their spiritual abilities. Moses, says Ibn Kaspi, was a person, was a unique individual. He was a person who was totally spiritual. He was a person, if you wish, not of this world. So he took off both shoes to show that he lived in the world, but his head wasn't there. He sort of hovered over reality. I noticed that he lived on his own. His family life was not anything that any of us would have wanted. He was a person who reached such heights of intimacy with God that God says he's the most faithful servant in his house. According to the rabbis, every single only Moses of all the prophets can be a legislator. No prophet is allowed to give mitzvot. So as a result, he takes off both shoes. Shoes show anchoring in this world. Shoes indicate having both feet on the ground, you know, being in reality. Moses did not. Yeshua, on the other hand, was a person who, while not reaching the level of his teacher, of his master, who he never left, it says that Joshua was, since the time he was a young man, he never left Moses' side. Nevertheless, he bridged worlds. He certainly was a prophet. He certainly was spiritually accomplished. You could not be spending all those years with Moshe. But he also had one. He might have hovered on one side, but he definitely had one foot firmly placed in reality on the ground. And that's the difference between the two. I would like to suggest that the difference between master and disciple, between Moshe and Joshua, is exactly what lies behind the shift that takes place in the story of Ne Meriva, of the Waters of Strife. Moshe Rabbeinu was a person of inestimable and inimitable greatness. He functioned in the desert. That's where he received the law. That's where he fashioned the soul of the Jewish people. That's where he achieved his greatness. But he was not fully of this world. Yeshua had to lead the people from a wilderness existence into the settled world, deal with daily problems, to deal with conquest, to deal with settlement, to deal with administration, and all these other things. And the question is, who is better suited for that task? Moses, with his incredible achievements as a spiritual person, because his vision transcended generations, or Yeshua, who was limited because he actually lived also in this world, one foot firmly planted in the world. I suggest that Ne Meriva was a test of Moses. Note, remember that Moshe Rabbeinu had to do something similar earlier in his career. Right after the Exodus, there was a lack of water. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, go hit the rock. He hits the rock. There's water. Everybody's happy. Here he's told to speak to the rock. Now is not the time to go into the whole question about what's the difference. Speak to the rock, hit the rock, what do they signify? Should be a different conversation. Clearly they're different. And clearly at this stage of the ballgame, Moshe Rabbeinu was told that hitting the rock is totally inappropriate. With this crowd, it's a brand new generation, with this crowd, you speak to the rock, you don't hit the rock. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know the difference. Or he didn't discern the difference. And I suspect and I suggest that that's the reason that God said, you're not up to this. You're not up to this. Joshua has to be the one to bring the people into the ground. That doesn't mean that you're not going to be Avocha, Avishal, Kol HaNeviim, the Guru Moshe Rabbeinu, the father, the master, the greatest of all the prophets. But at the moment, for the purposes of the next task, you've proven that you're not up to it. This is not for you. You can see the land from afar, but you can't go over. I think this speaks to an insight into the nature of leadership. Rav Soloveitchik used to always say that every single person has a. He says it actually for those who are interested. He has it. He mentions it. Actually, he's quoting Rav Kook there. It's one of the few places where he quotes Rav Kook in his collection of Tshuva Drushes called Yemei Zikaron, Days of Remembrance. He says that everybody has their own mission in life. And that mission in life means that a person is born at a specific time, in certain circumstances with certain talents, because that's why they were supposed to be. And they're supposed to find out what their mission is and realize it. And had they been born in a different time or place, they really wouldn't have fit and they wouldn't have accomplished anything. Every single leader has to know that to find, every single person, but certainly every leader has to realize that there's the circumstances in which they exist right now are why they're needed to maximize the effectiveness and the realization of the task that they discover that they're supposed to fill. And when the situation changes, to have the humility to say, now is the time to pass on the baton. Now is the time to pass on the leadership to somebody who's, given the new circumstances, needs to be, has talents that I don't have, now has insight that I don't have, and now has a mission that is different than mine. Moses' mission ended on the eastern bank of the Jordan, and Joshua's mission starts on the edge of the west, and the river goes between. Shabbat Shalom.